proud APHA member, a member of the Peace Caucus, and want to thank Joy and the other members of the Peace Caucus for making this possible, and every year providing us with some very interesting, important ideas that you don't get to hear in most places. Unpaid announcement. I am Greg Pappas. I am a professor and chairman of the Department of Community Health Science at the Aga Khan University in Karachi. I've been working in Karachi in Pakistan over the last 25 years, and I'm going to speak to you about my experience and knowledge about the country, and specifically speak from a paper that I'm writing with my colleagues that's going to be in a theme issue in The Lancet on Pakistan. We're talking about politics, governance, and the health system. First, assalamu alaikum from the Aga Khan University in Karachi. The Aga Khan University was the first private university to be founded in Pakistan, founded by His Highness Prince Karim the Aga Khan. And my department was really the strategic cornerstone of a unique vision to build a medical school and a nursing home with a distinct public health perspective. You talk to surgeons in Karachi, and they understand public health, and they practice public health. It's a very unique institution in many ways. We're very proud of that. Pakistan is the first Islamic republic created after the partition of India in 1947. Now has over 170 million people with this astronomical rise in population. Been plagued by disruptions and violence. 22 changes of government since 1947, most of them due to violence. But I want to say something about Pakistan. It's not what people think, and Islam is not what people think. I know this is kind of a select group, but I have to say this anyway. I'm not a Muslim, but I've been working in Muslim countries for a long time, and I recommend you take a look at the Gallup polls, Who Speaks for Islam, which is a survey of a billion Muslims. It's a huge survey. I mean, they didn't talk to a billion people, but they did represent a sample of all the Muslims in the world. And coming out of actually rather politically conservative organization, the Gallup, but still very fair. And they tell us what most of us who've worked in Muslim countries know, that Muslims do not condone terrorism. They admire the West. They seek gender equity. And clerics are not seen as major political figures in the country, not a source of law. I mean, they're minorities. I put the radicals and Islamists are a minority in these countries, but this is the mainstream. I put this picture of this lovely creature here as an anecdote to many people's ideas about what's going on in Pakistan. This is Pakistan's biggest television star, Begum Nawaz Shaili. It's a man in drag who is a cross between Dane Edna and Larry King Live. He does serious political interview, hard-hitting interview. I was on his program for 90 minutes speaking about public health. Serious political interviews, in drag, openly gay man. This is Pakistan. It's not the country we think about. Anyway, this is also Pakistan. Almost stagnant infant mortality over the last 40, 50 years, rapidly escalating a population, disruptions, regional disruptions in war, Indo-Pak war, Russian-Afghan war, nuclear testing, 9/11. I mean, this is just, you know, one. And I didn't even put on here all the near wars with India. And here is U.S. aid. Hardly a stable pattern. And always goes down, you know, around these conflicts. It's also a country, I mean, we think of Pakistan as a poor country with infant mortality and problems in nutrition, and all that's true. 40% of children in Pakistan are still malnourished. 40% in the 21st century are still malnourished. In Karachi, where I live, 60% of poor children are malnourished in the city. But we also have the double burden of disease. We have endemic levels of hypertension. Here's Pakistan and the United States, U.S. hypertension, Pakistan hypertension for men, U.S. women, Pakistani women, hypertension, almost equal. So we have this huge burgeoning chronic disease problem. And a government that spends less than 3% of GDP on health. What I've done here is a kind of a thought experiment. I'm talking about governance, not forms of governance. I'm not talking about dictatorships and democracies or various forms of either. Governance, that is the way government government performs can be relatively better or relatively worse with whatever form of government might be in place. And governance matters. People's lives are at stake, and the government has a responsibility for health. Pakistan is in the constitution, confers a right to health care. And they have signatories to every major international convention guaranteeing the rights of the child and rights to health and education. Governments are the steward of public funds, including your and I fund. Billions of dollars have gone to Pakistan, $53 billion in the last 10 years, and infant mortality hasn't improved. And there's a large literature out there that begs the question for all of us, why aid fails. And one of the reasons, there's two reasons I'm going to talk about. I'm going to focus on the governance issue. So this governance issue is an interesting issue. It was a contribution of the World Bank. It started out originally very contentious. There's an article by Weaver that talks about how this literature evolved. And it was kind of against the grain at the World Bank because it was talking about the role of government. You know, the neoliberal conservative tone at the bank is the government should just stay out. Less government, no government. And this literature kind of brought back in, wait a second, governments have a role, and what we need to have good governance. It's developed into a very robust framework, and it's actually developed into an index where you can measure these various components or domains of development of governance and add it up. Now, I am adding a little bit to this discussion of governance because the World Bank kind of leaves out the role of the donors. You know, the donors kind of tell you that we're guests in the country. You know, no, those bad brown people, we're guests in the country. They're not guests in the country. You know, they weren't really invited there to begin with, and they are completely enmeshed in the government and need to take responsibility for governance. And I'm going to give you some examples of how the donor community directly affects governance in these countries. So that's my contribution to this literature. So here's the six domains. I'm going to go through each of them briefly. If any of you would like to read this paper, send me an email. Actually, I'd like your comment because this is kind of in review right now. But I want to give you a flavor for the paper. These six domains, and I'm going to go through them and give a little example. Voice and accountability, the extent to which a country's citizens are able to participate in selecting their government, as well as freedom of expression, freedom of associations, freedom of media. For health, that translates to equity. And equity is a major problem in Pakistan. Poor people, health is much poorer. Everyone's health is poor in Pakistan, actually. Even the rich don't do so well. The real glaring error here is that in the system is that the privileged are the ones who receive most of the government-paid care. It's the generals and the elite that the government pays for. The poor people pay for the health care out of their pocket. There's a general reluctance of the government to deal with the private sector or with NGOs, so that this issue of voice and accountability is a major problem. Just a little anecdote, government expenditures there was over $1 million of health care received by 11 elite people in the country, and that's 13 times more than the government spends on the entire prevention and control of non-communicable diseases. Is just one glaring inequity. Violence and absence of political stability and violence, perceptions of the likelihood the government will be destabilized or overthrown by unconstitutional or violent means, including domestic violence and terrorism. Domestic violence and instability causes huge amount of problems. We did a study of the government of Sindh. There has been, for the 53 top positions in the bureaucracy, 700 postings and transfers over 24 years. The average bureaucrat sits in the chair for about a year. There's constant turnover. There's a constant flux of the bureaucracy. How can you run a program? How can you improve the health of your community if you're worried about what your next job is from the day you start? In this, however, international violence plays a role too. It creates a backlash. Conservative political leaders use the war in Baghdad and the war in Afghanistan to tell people that America's bad and they're out to kill Muslims, and vaccination programs are the tool that the United States is using to harm children in the country. Now, that's a lie, but they're mobilizing sentiment of people in this country around a war. So, I mean, these things are not disconnected. Government effectiveness, the quality of public services, healthcare services are shockingly poor in Pakistan. There's all sorts of reasons: poor planning, poor program, poor policy, and the fact that all these things are generated independently and not coordinated. I could talk for hours about the poor quality of healthcare in the country. Regulatory quality. I mean, governments need to. It's a core function of government to regulate the effectiveness of care, the quality of medication, the safety of medication, the cleanliness of food and water. There's no functioning quality assurance program in the country for drugs or for medication. Half of drugs that are bought on the shelf in Pakistan are either fraudulent drugs or dangerous or watered down, half of drugs. And mostly it's poor people, you know, buying the drugs because the government won't buy anything for poor people. So they're the least able to pay and the biggest victims. Rule of law, the extent to which agents are have confidence in and abide in the rules of society. Quacks are endemic. Anybody can put up a shingle and say they're a doctor. There aren't any rules for medical negligence. There's really no legal code that protects people from doctors who malpractice or quacks that malpractice. The courts are highly inefficient. Corruption, everyone's favorite. Pakistan's one of the most corrupt countries in the world, down there with Nigeria. In the health sector, there's two major areas. Absenteeism, which people talk when people have government jobs and they don't go to the clinic, they don't work. It's the wrong word. It's ghost workers. They never go to work. You know, it's not like, well, you know, I don't think I'll go to work today. You know, I think I'll stay home today. You know, it's not absenteeism. It's ghost workers. They get these jobs for political reasons, and they never go to work. And there's no intention of work. In fact, there's a separate set of books. I've got friends who documented this in Transparency International. It's not just me, you know, waving my arms hysterically, although I do that too. They have a separate set of books. The government gives you the job, and then you get a salary. And the deal is you don't have to go, but then you have to give a certain amount of money back to the bureaucracy for that privilege of not working and getting a salary. And there's books that are audited. This is the real books, because this is real money. Leakage, medications, another, you know, just wholesale graft, and this is more at the higher level. There's lots of leakage in the system, and everybody pilfers things along the way. The big leakage is the high-level bureaucrats have these ghost companies where they say they're selling drugs to the government. They take money from the government. They send invoices, but nothing ever happens except for the transfer of wealth from the state to high-level bureaucrats' personal accounts. I'm going to give you two examples. This is a long paper with lots of guts in it that kind of bring these together around particular programs. This is something I'm very proud of, but it's a tragic story. Tawana, Pakistan, our university, worked with the government. We had piloted a school feeding program, and it was so successful that when Musharraf first came into government, he asked us to replicate this program in 29 of the poorest districts of the country. We went to 4,000 schools for primary age school girls, 400,000 girls, and we created these committees of moms, mothers in the community, illiterate women, and taught them how to. It was like a microfinance situation. We gave them a little money, we sent it to them in the bank, but then we had to take pictures of them so they could get national identity cards to set up bank accounts, and then taught them how to do balanced meals and manage this money and how to do hygienic cooking. And so we fed these girls lunch with the idea that their nutrition would get better and they'd go to school more. And so we were able to cut malnutrition in half in 2 years and double school enrollment. So what happened? Well, obviously the program was canceled because 75% of the money was going to villages, not to corrupt bureaucrats. The government dismantled the program after a sham third-party evaluation. They never looked at the data. I mean, this is a university. This is done by our department. Huge, millions of pieces of data. This is, you know, enormous data. We got criticized in the inception of for wanting to spend money on data. You know, so we have all this data. You know, it's a great. We've been publishing on this, and the government then went forward and put a milk and cookies program in its place. Totally interesting. It's an interesting long story. I'm only going to focus on one part of it because I want to bring in this unique aspect of the donors. Why milk and cookies? Well, it was very interesting that Land O'Lakes, the U.S. dairy company, was running around the country. Every time I went to present the data, Land O'Lakes had already been there. Oh, yeah, we heard about that. No, this is a different one. No, we heard about the Land O'Lakes, but, milk and cookies is a great idea. Our government, U.S. Trade Representative, supports the U.S. Milk producers because that's their job. Now, we don't have smoking gun, but it was interesting. Every time there was a TWANA meeting, Land O'Lakes was there. We never invited them. They were always around. And then after our program got dismantled, this milk and cookies program was put in place. But don't worry, the kids, the little girls. Didn't get the milk and cookies either. That program failed because they never even got it off the ground. It was just, in name. Another case study. Another interesting one. Again, no one likes General Musharraf except for me. this is another one of his programs to deal with this absenteeism, this ghost. A worker phenomena. There was one senator who was this big landlord down in southern Punjab, and he wanted health care for his workers. It was government right, and he was a senator. So he called the Ministry of Health and said, send a doctor to my district. I want five doctors in my five clinics. Doctors never came. So he said, he talked to the president, said, we're going to give money to an NGO, and we're going to do something very unique, very complicated. No, actually very easy. We're going to hire doctors, and if they come to work, we're giving them money. If they don't come to work, we're not going to pay them. And they did it in one district. They rolled it out to 1,000 BHUs in Punjab, and it increased utilization of services by 400% in 3 months at half the cost. They couldn't spend the money. That's how padded the budget was. They were allowed to spend the money within very specific limitations. They couldn't hire another midwife, or they couldn't buy more Medicaid. They had to do certain things, and they could only spend half the money. That's how padded this. So what happened there? Huge barrage in the newspaper about corruption. None of it founded. Huge misinformation campaign, and then the international community, international agencies. All of them, World Bank, DFID, USAID, none of them defended this program because they didn't want to piss off the government. Now, it's interesting, the new government coming into place has liked this program. It was the president's initiative for primary care. Now it's the people's initiative because it's People's Party. We'll see what they can do. I'm hoping for the best. So I've got 3 minutes now to wind up, and I'm going to try not to be global and cosmic about conclusions and solutions, trying to be concrete and realizable. School. I tell my staff, this was a setback, but school feeding programs have just started in Pakistan. It's going to go through a series of iterations, so hopefully we'll be able to restart this model that's been shown effective in another administration. Contracting out needs to be expanded and refined. There are many problems with the way it was originally. The original contracting out scheme for the basic health units, the primary care, is not perfect. And there are ways to refine it. So again, we're just at the beginning of these refinements. I don't want to be totally negative about Pakistan. There are many wonderful things about this beautiful country and very loving people. And there are parts of the government that work marginally. There's a lady health worker program, the community health worker, like barefoot doctor program, that works not terribly. It's not great. It's got problems. This is the bottom line and how it relates to this session. Thinking about, again, this was a thought experiment for me, a way of using this conceptual framework to think through my experience and my colleagues. I mean, amongst you see the very impressive list of co-authors. These are people who have been working in the Pakistan health system at very high levels for decades. So we've got a lot of brain power on this paper. And what we come up with is that underneath all this governance, the thing that keeps us from going forward is instability, political instability and violence. Because none of these problems will ever resolve themselves until there's a stable government. India, with all its problems, has had 60 years of democracy. And India is a huge problem. It's a much more complicated situation than Pakistan, with many of the same problems that we're talking about here. But they have made progress, where Pakistan has actually slid back. For the other half of the story, I said that there's two things. There's governance, and that's also why aid fails. Please go out and read William Easterling's book, White Man's Burden, Why Aid Fails. So with that, I'd like to close by citing Al-Hujuri. Al-Hujuri was a Sufi saint who wrote in the 11th century. He was one of the people who took Islam to northern Pakistan, and he wrote the first book on Sufism in Persian. And he said, "Some say knowledge is superior to action. Others say action is superior to knowledge. Both are wrong. Unless knowledge is tied to action, it's not deserving the recompense." So this is a spirit. Actually, I think probably Goethe, we kind of hear this in Western literature, Goethe read Sufi poetry, so he probably got it from Datta Sabar Al-Hujuri. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure. If anybody's interested to learn anything more about the school feeding program, that brochure's up here, or to learn about the Department of Community Health Science, the Alpine University.
Great. How about leaving an email?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. I'm so sorry he's got to go. We would have such a nice discussion, but oh well. Next, we will hear from Wali Al-Delami, who is speaking man-made public health disasters. Dr. Ahmad.
Thank you, Joy. That was a close spelling of my name, but I've, I don't mind as long as I can recognize it's my name. People call me Wheel, Y-L, and I try to make it simple as Wael, Wael Al-Delami, and I'm a associate professor at UCSD here. This topic is a bit different from my usual profession, but it's not totally different, so I don't know how to... Okay. Next is Haynes. Other?